Kathy and I were chatting just this last week about something I would like to share this morning. We're trying to figure out when exactly that she, in an unguarded moment, opened up and told me about a very dark secret that she had been holding. I think we both kind of arrived at around 2 years into our marriage. So that was like 25 years ago. I know that's hard for you guys to believe. You're thinking I was probably 10 years old when I got married. I don't know what brought it up. I think we might have even been having an argument. But in the middle of it all, Kathy blurted out that she had been a victim of a sexual assault when she was a teen. And instantly your head just starts spinning, and I'm looking at her and I don't know what to say. She was very guarded. I'm sure she had thought about it for a long time in terms of how she would tell me. We talk about it now. She says, I didn't want to say too much. She says, I was very careful how many details I told you, because she says, I wasn't sure how you're going to react. Even this week we're talking about it, and I was like, you didn't want to tell me, like, even when we were dating. She says, I was just so fearful that it would change things between us, that you would look at me differently. I remember feeling so angry, wanting names. I wanted to expose the person that had hurt her. I wanted to make him pay. And she was like, no. No, you are to tell no one. She had kept the secret from her family. None of her family knew at that point. 11 years. She buried that thing down. She was determined to kind of hoping that it would just go away. But it hadn't gone away. I mean, the moment she started telling me, the tears began to flow. The emotion, I mean, it was raw. It had been festering below the surface for her. You know, sadly, Kathy's story isn't rare. There are literally millions of people who have been wounded sexually. And whether you fall into that tragic category or many other categories of wounding, I don't think there is a person listening to me this morning who hasn't been deeply wounded by someone. I know you've been hurt by someone. You've been betrayed, or you've been gossiped about. You've been judged. You've been taken advantage of. Perhaps you've been abandoned in some way at some point. Maybe abused in some way. Really, the list of ways that this can happen are endless, isn't it? Question. How do you respond to those who wound us? Should you go after them and make them pay? Pursue justice and accountability? And to what end? And what about the remaining wounds that are left behind? Are they supposed to just heal on their own eventually? Do they just go away? Are we supposed to just live with the hauntings? You know, those painful jabs inside our psyche, inside, deep inside of us, when those dark memories get triggered by something going on and the pain kind of floods back? Is there something we can do to be free, to move on? That's what we're here to talk about today and over the next 3 weeks. Now, what makes this conversation really difficult is that you can't see these kind of wounds that I'm talking about. They leave no outward, obvious signs of injury. Someone says something about you that's so wrong, and it cuts you deep. Someone betrays you. Maybe they violated your trust. Or someone steals from you. Or uses you. Or gossips about you, and it comes back door. Or about your loved one. Someone just turns their back on you one day, just leaves you hanging, abandoned. And the pain, the emotional or the mental anguish that that act causes. Oh, there's nothing on the surface that explains how bad that thing hurt. The wound is invisible to everyone, but in that moment, you know how much it hurt. What is even more tragic for some who have been wounded is that because of the nature of the injury, the kind of insidious crime committed, not only did you feel the pain, but along with it comes shame that keeps you from wanting to show the injury, that keeps you from wanting to expose it. In fact, it has you running and hiding. It has you clenching your teeth and smiling and pretending nothing happened. Something inside you is saying, you shut up about this, because it will only hurt you more. It will only cause you more embarrassment or more shame. So you smile through the pain. But deep down inside your soul, your heart, it's been nicked. For others, it's been ripped wide open. Crushed. Maybe you're raging with anger underneath, or you're crushed with disappointment. Maybe you are just overwhelmed with guilt for some reason because of everything that went on. Maybe there's this stinging sensation of resentment, hostility, bitterness. You look at that person, you say, I could almost kill you. Or get you in some way. Though you may not have understood all that just happened inside of you, there is no denying that down deep something got broke. What do you do to stop it? To fix it? To make that pain go away? What many don't realize is these wounds, they require attention. They need a specific kind of response to heal them, to make that pain go away. The million-dollar question is, what is that response? What actually helps? I'll call her Mary. A woman I remember chatting with, she always felt less important, less successful, less desired of her and her sibling, her brother, by her dad. Her brother, it seemed, could do no wrong in his eyes. It was like he had always wanted the son. And together they fished, Together they watched sports. Together they would hang out and talk about things that they had so much in common. But Mary just always struggled to make her dad see her. She says, I didn't really start noticing it till I was about 8 or 9. But then when I noticed it, it was like every time I would be in the room with my dad, or I'd come into the room and he would say hi to me, but then my brother would walk in. And to see him light up, to see him all of a sudden go from having nothing to talk about to having everything to talk about with my brother. To see them saying, hey, what do you say we do this? And her saying, can I come? And watching her dad's face change. She says, but something inside me told me that if I told him that it bothered me, he would think I was a baby. And I didn't want to be a baby. I didn't want him to think that I was this little girl that was fragile. No, she says, I just pretended it didn't bother me. I put on a brave face. And I pretended nothing hurt. Instead, she just shoved that hurt and that frustration down deeper and deeper. They call it suppression. You just suppress the hurt. You pretend like nothing just happened. It's a lot like taking those hurts and those memories. In that moment when you feel that pain and you shove it down inside, you put it somewhere, and probably mentally you're thinking, I'm just gonna throw it in this internal garbage can somewhere. And I'm gonna just chuck it out. And so it will never come back. So I don't have to think about it anymore. But what we don't realize is it's not a garbage can where it's going. It's actually more like a suitcase that you're throwing it into, somewhere inside. You don't realize it. You just place it inside there. And you close it so you don't have to think about it. But what we don't realize is it ain't going anywhere. And over time, this thing just begins to get fuller. Stuff just begins to accumulate in there. We've talked about this suitcase that we build of deep emotional wounds. And before long, you know what? We're dragging this thing around. We don't realize that the stuff that happened way back there, that paper, you just kick it, you suppress it. It just starts hanging on. Not only does it get heavier and heavier over time, depending on whether you're good at suppressing stuff, but it begins to develop, the stuff inside begins to develop this real strong negative charge. And every time something that happens in the present that feels even remotely or sounds remotely similar to something that you buried down in there, it triggers the negative energy. You know what that feels like? Someone's saying something, and out of the blue, something starts. And there's an overreaction, or all of a sudden, emotions are coming up. You find yourself saying things, and you're like, oh, where did that come? Sometimes that negative energy triggers something at the most unlikely, bad timing. Just comes out, bubbles to the surface. It's like that Morissette song called The Grudge that was just playing. There's a line in there. Who is this thing hurting? This grudge that you're holding? This bitterness deep down inside that you're just shoving down there? Who's it hurting now? Who's the one that's stuck? Who's it torturing now with an antique knot in her stomach? Oh, it ain't going away. It's just rotting inside, stirring up trouble when it decides it wants to. insidious thing about this suitcase, this pain body, as Eckhart Tolle would call it. We become so accustomed to carrying it around over time. We become so identified with this thing that we begin to think that all that negative charge, those reactions, everything, it's just who we are. That's just the way life is. That's just how I am. You can try to push it down. You can try to take that trauma and pretend that nothing happened. But I'll tell you right now, the psychology profession has made millions trying to help people deal with stuff they tried to shove into some place, thinking it would go away, and it never did. They thought it was a garbage can and it was a suitcase. So if suppression isn't the answer, if just pretending it didn't hurt, denying what happened, not talking about whatever isn't the answer, then what is? What about revenge? That's a common action, isn't it? There's this crazy story in the Bible. Crazy. It's been passed on through the children of Israel for years about a man named Samson. If you've never heard of Samson, I think Samson was probably one of the original guys. I mean, this guy, he was pure testosterone. You know, the kind that roll up to the gym in the 84 Camaro, wearing the Gold's Gym t-shirt. You know those guys? Nothing but protein shakes and muscle cars and tanning machines. Yeah. That's how I picture Samson. Samson was getting married and a bad scene went down. Bad. The whole thing blew up. Samson just kind of vacated the scene, went off the radar. His new wife going one way, him going the other. He had had kind of a clearing his head kind of season. We don't know exactly how long it was. But finally, one day, he kind of comes to his senses and says, man, I got to hit the reset button. I got to find my little lady. We got to restart the romance. So he shows up at his father-in-law's house, knocking on the door where he knows his wife is staying, and says, hey, I'm here to see my bride. Scriptures say, hey, you'd like to visit her in the bedroom. He had intentions, romantic intentions. Her father-in-law won't let him in the house. He says, geez, you know, you've been gone a while. I was convinced that maybe you had hated her by now. So what I did is I gave her to your best man. But he thinks quickly on his feet, this father-in-law. He says, hey, tell you what, she has a younger sister. She has a nice personality. You'll like her. You can have her instead. Samson is livid. He cannot believe that his father-in-law would do that. He looks at him and says, okay, you know what? Yeah, that whole thing that went down at that wedding, yeah, that might have been my bad, but I'm telling you, what I'm about to do to you and your people, I'm blameless. This is not on me. The story says he goes out and he finds 300 jackals, or foxes, some translations would have it, and he takes them and he ties them in pairs by their tails and ties a torch onto the tails. Two foxes take off this way, foxes go that way, 300 jackals head out into the countryside, lighting everything they travel over on fire. Lighting up vineyards, fields of grain, olive groves, torching the countryside. Well, the village are looking at the flames and they're going, what the heck? What's going on? They begin trying to figure out what's happened. They find out that it was a guy named Samson. They hear the story and they say, oh yeah, Samson? You want to do that? They go and track Samson's father-in-law and his bride down. And they butcher them, burn them to death. This is in the Bible. Samson says, oh, okay, you want to play it that way. Fine, I can play that game. He goes out, rounds up a bunch of the townspeople, pulls out this jaw and just slaughters like literally dozens of them. Let's play that game. I mean, this thing escalates so quick. I mean, 1 minute, his father-in-law is just saying, hey, look it, take her little sister. We'll make this all better. Next thing you know, the countryside is burned down. Their livelihoods are gone. And men have been massacred. Samson is without his wife and his father-in-law. I mean, it is a sick, sad story. Now, whether you can tie into all the details of that story and go, yeah, I can see how that could happen, it doesn't really matter, does it? Because if you've ever played the revenge game, you know that really, more than literally, this story is true. You know how revenge works. It starts with one person saying, okay, you want to play that game? I can play that game too. And you go ahead and try something. Oh, maybe it's nothing illegal. Maybe you can say, oh, you know what? I know some people you know. I think I'm going to share a little something about you with them. A little gossip. Nothing too crazy bad, but enough to really take down your credibility with them. Enough to get to prevent the invite to the next party with that group of people who you are always hanging out with. Give them the cold shoulder. Stop returning their phone calls. Don't respond to that text message. Nurse that grudge. Let them know that they are going to pay for what they did. Just subtle stuff. Oh, that can feel so tempting, can't it? You may, in those moments of that wounding, think you have every right to injure that other person and make them pay. But what you will do through taking revenge will likely only make things worse. If you've done it, you've probably know this to be true. Escalating. You thought you were hurting now. Wait till the next move that person takes. More hurt, more drama, more heartache. Revenge doesn't fix anything. Only makes things worse. So if suppression doesn't work and revenge tends to just make a mess, more of a mess, what are our other options? You know, lately we've spent the last month or so learning from Desmond Tutu, Vince and I, poring over his book, The Book of Forgiving. If you're familiar with Desmond Tutu, or maybe unfamiliar, he was an Anglican church leader, theologian in South Africa. He was especially an anti-apartheid and human rights activist. He was commissioned by Nelson Mandela to help South Africa heal from the wounds of apartheid. He played a major, major role in helping South Africa heal from unbelievable atrocities that were committed. His commission, the group of people that he assembled, listened to over 20,000 stories of just unbelievable horror that was committed, both from the side of the apartheid and from the other side, the anti-apartheid groups, warring, the factions, rival groups within the country. And through his learning and through that process, he began to jot down things that they were learning about helping people heal. Things that he began writing about in this book. Stuff that he said he witnessed with his own eyes transformed the lives of people who had been deeply wounded. I mean, people who had family and loved ones killed by other people. You begin to read these stories. Read is learning. You begin to think, at least we did, if it could help people in South Africa through that stuff, I think he's got something to say for me. Perhaps for you here. In the book, he describes a four-step process, which he witnessed transform lives. And so we said, you know what, let's spend 4 weeks walking through the four-step process. Today, to end my message this morning, I want to talk about his simple first step. Simple in concept. And that is to tell your story. First step. This step is actually what Kathy did that day when she opened up with me. Neither of us knew how important that courageous step would be, how helpful it would be. I know I didn't. I didn't know what hit me. I'm listening to her and I'm thinking, oh my, like, but what led up to her doing that and then her just beginning to share, she would share and she would wait and watch. I didn't realize it in that moment, but if I responded right, then more stuff would come out. It was like she was just unzipping this suitcase a little bit and she would watch my reaction. And then she would unzip it a little bit more. And by the time that conversation, that interaction happened, she had her suitcase open and she had shown me one of her darkest areas of her life. What happened as she did that is undeniable to us. The incredible relief that it brought. It was like this huge weight had started lifting off her shoulders. I mean, as the emotion flowed, I mean, we were, I remember hugging her and I just didn't want to say the wrong things. I was just like, I'm so sorry. And I don't even know what all I said. I just remember watching her just come apart, and then she just, it just felt different. The relief after the ugly details start coming out, as they're laid bare on the table, and a person is looking at them and going, I am so sorry. I am so sorry. Have you ever done that? Have you ever opened up with someone and told them about something deep and dark, hurt inside of you? Have you ever felt the relief I speak of? If you've done this, you know what I'm talking about. You know how it kickstarts something inside of you. Healthy spirituality is always honest about what is being experienced. That's one thing you'll find throughout the whole trajectory of our scriptures. Men and women learning to open up and say, here's the God's honest truth about something bad that went down back there. It seems that there is this deep, very natural need inside each of us, not just to acknowledge the good that's happened in our lives, but there is something that cries out from within that is so healthy that says, I want to tell you the ugly, the part that bothers me so much, that makes me so angry, that makes me sick, that makes me want to scream, that makes me want to almost kill that person. Sometimes when you take the step of opening up the suitcase and you begin to talk, you don't, many people that get to that point that are saying, I'm going to do this, sometimes they don't even know that there's a story there. They just know that there's something burning that needs to come out. And so they start. And it's like, even as they begin to talk, they're just pieces, data, facts about what happened. They don't even know how to even tell the story. And that's okay. As you begin to talk, as you begin to open up, as someone begins to acknowledge what just went down, the story begins to make sense. Desmond Tutu, in his book, he says there's this melding of the implicit memory that you have. You don't even remember all the details. Some of us who are really good at suppressing, you can't even remember most of the details. You just shoved it down so far, you just know something bad went down. But as you begin to talk, as you begin to open up, the implicit memories start to meld with the explicit. Some little fact, some little detail begins to pop in your mind. You go, wait, no, it wasn't that person. It was this person that was there. And you begin to tell this hodgepodge story, and all of a sudden the blending of the implicit and the explicit come together, and the story begins to unfold. In the process of telling our story, Tutu says, we're able to get our dignity back after we've been harmed. Storytelling is how we begin to take back what was stolen, what was taken from us. It's how we begin to make meaning out of that hurt. To move on, to make better versions of ourselves, requires us to be less and less fearful of whatever story lies within. You can't fix the trauma. You can't begin to empty the suitcase until you're willing to open it up and make it visible to someone. And only when you drag out what happened out into the light can healing begin. But you need to expose it. If you look around our culture, you can see this happening. People are waking up to the power of storytelling. Some on very personal levels, some at a higher levels. And what we watch on TV, what we watch in the movies, people that are beginning to open up and tell the story, not just of themselves, but of their group, for their race, for their sexual orientation, for their neighborhoods, for their genders, for their environment, for their children. We hear the stories of these survivors from residential schools. We hear people talking about their survival from abuse within the church. We watch even Leah Remini pulling the story out of people that are stepping out of Scientology right now. Black Lives Matter, people who have felt burned by God, telling their stories of how God let them down. We're watching it in the Me Too movement. Women stepping out for the first time going, I cannot be silenced anymore. I'm telling my story. We're watching this happen all over the place. People realizing, if I'm going to heal, if I'm going to empty this thing, I got to start talking. And I got to believe that someone out there is willing to listen and validate what I'm saying. People realizing, if I'm going to heal, I got to talk. I got to get it out. One of the most important decisions you'll make at this stage is figuring out who you're going to tell. Maybe it's a close family member. Tutu really warned about going back to your perpetrator first out of the chute. He says in the process, what they learned through the commission is, unless your perpetrator is really contrite, willing to acknowledge what was done, willing to listen and validate the hurt, going to them to tell your story first out of the chute might be a really bad idea. But finding someone you can trust, maybe it's a close family member, a friend, maybe it's a therapist, maybe it's one of us as pastors. We have this happen every now and then. I don't care who it is. Just know we're here. We need to get people telling their stories. Whoever you can find that will be affirming, that will be empathetic, that will be trustworthy. You got someone. If you do, and even as I was talking today about some of this stuff and you started thinking about what's in your suitcase, perhaps there's something down inside. I can see some of you, you are here for a very specific reason. You heard about this series. You know there's stuff stuck in your suitcase. You know it. And if that's you, I'm telling you, would you be willing to begin this week by telling your story? Someone. It can be as easy as phoning someone up and just saying, you know what, I'm wondering if you could do me a huge favor. I'm realizing that something happened to me in the past and I want to move past it. But the first step is I need to be able to tell someone. I'm wondering if I could talk to you about it. And you don't have to fix me. You don't have to, you don't have to even say anything. I just need you to listen to me. It can be that simple. Maybe there's someone here in this place. You look across and you go, I know I could trust that person. Would you be willing to do that? Now, someone here might be the person who gets asked. Can I just give you a little advice? Maybe you as a spouse are going to be contacted and asked. Maybe you're a friend of someone who's going to say, I need you to do this. Just a few hints, few tips. Number one, don't question the facts. Don't cross-examine. Just create a safe place. Look with understanding. Empathize. Feel what they're feeling. You can say, I'm sorry. You can say, that is not right what happened. You say, I can't believe that happened. I'm so sorry. Empathize with the pain. That's all I need to say. Would you be willing to take a first step this week to move on? Maybe you go, you know what? I haven't had any of those big things. Maybe it's a little thing that you just need to bring up to move on. Some of you, you're going, no. You want to be the strong type. You don't want to admit that there's weak. I'm telling you, stop it. Let's move on this week. May many suitcases get pulled out. May many zippers this week get cracked open. And may many conversations that begin to lift that weight off the shoulders happen. That is my prayer for you this week. You need help, you need advice, you need someone to kick you to doing it, you come and talk. We'll give you a good kick. Would you? Let's take the first step. There's three more steps. This isn't all of it. This is first step. But let's take the first step this week. Done. Let's let 2019 be the start of something amazing. Freedom. I've talked to too many of you over these last few weeks as leading up to this series start who want to be free. This is where it starts. God, as I take my step, as I open up, I've wanted to just look at the hurts of others. I know there's stuff that's ambushing me, that takes over at times. I know there's stuff down there that I've not wanted to address. And tired of it. Help me to be bold. Help me to reveal the stuff that's ugly. And for anyone else here that needs to do that, yeah, may good things come from it. Amen.